Hello, Trailblazers fans, and welcome to the Blazers Edge podcast. I'm your co-host, Dan Morang, and thank you for joining us as we brought to you, or you can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, and multiple other platforms that are out there. Whatever way you're here listening to us, welcome, and we'll go ahead and give it to our other co-host here, managing editor of Blazers Edge, Dave Decker. Dave, how you doing today?
Pretty good. This is actually the first time we've spoken since the season ended. Joe and Tara did a fine job last week, as always, and they always seem to pop up right at Christmas. They were the first ones to talk about LaMarcus. They were the first ones to talk about the season ending. They are quite competent and well-timed. But how are you feeling, Dan, with the season done? We won't spend too much time on it, but briefly, what are your impressions from 2015-16?
You know, the last time we talked, I came to the conclusion that I really didn't know a lot more about this team than I did December, January, February. And really that ended up being the case as the season wound down. The gentleman sweep, however close it may have been to the Warriors at times, did happen. So that wasn't a huge surprise. But as far as this iteration of the Blazers team, I'm still kind of scratching my head at who they really are, who the players are that really still have potential left, and who are the guys that really are only going to make the small tweaks to their game going forward. You aren't going to see that otherworldly evolution like you see from a guy like, you know, Kawhi Leonard, who takes the 3-and-D to the, you know, MVP level status, you know, or just that small bit of growth that means so much to a younger player.
Yeah, really interesting. I mean, I guess I'm a little more definitive in that I think at least some questions were answered. Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum, can they play? Can they play at a high level while being the target of NBA defenses? Sure, I think we answered that. Now, the playoffs brought up interesting conundrums in that now the defense is focused exclusively on them, and you saw a lot worse efficiency and a lot more up and down. And obviously that's an issue, but that may not be an issue with McCollum and Lillard as much as it is with the front court not being able to score. I think some questions were answered there. Is there potential in the front court? Sure, for certain things, but do the Blazers need help? Yes, definitely. So, you know, we found out a few things, but I think you're right. This team is far from set. And I don't think the thing that happened here is I don't think that the normal indicators are there. I think normally a team like this would have finished very low in the playoff brackets or maybe just out of the playoffs. And that gives you an idea of where they would be and what you need to do. The fact that they did so well almost not exactly hides the reality, but it makes the indicators and the reality not exactly match up, which always leaves a level of doubt that makes me kind of itch as you wonder how people see this team going forward who are in charge of it.
Yeah, you know, Tim brought up a point earlier on that, and Timmy for at Blazers Edge, for those who don't know, that 44 wins over the last 10 years, more often than not, it's not going to get you in the playoffs, particularly in the Western Conference and how strong it's been. And people can argue that, you know, that things are cyclical and that the Western Conference is on a downswing, the Eastern Conference is coming back up. I really don't care about that particular argument, but the basis is that this team overachieved that much and still made it to a level that normally wouldn't get you in the playoffs. So for me, the playoffs were kind of from a fan standpoint, it was fun. And I've talked about it enough times to where that I kind of distanced myself from the season as far as being really invested in. I was more interested in the growth opportunities that were there, like you discussed with Lillard and McCollum. Those were the things that I was really trying to pay attention to. And as much as I enjoyed the playoffs, the fact that the Blazers don't currently have a draft pick and really are lacking a lot of assets in the cupboard, something that we've been kind of familiar with as a younger team over the last few years, that kind of bothers me right now. Is the deeper I looked into things, the more I was kind of scratching my head at, okay, now what? You've got a couple of guys that are restricted free agents that are going to fetch quite a bit of money. You've got Lillard's contract's already on the books, you know, a season early. that's kicking in and hitting the cap space. Numerous other teams have cap space, so you don't have that kind of a leg up, and you don't have the trade chips, you don't have the draft picks to really move and shuffle around. You've really, outside of Damian Lillard, the tradable assets on this roster consist of C.J. McCollum, Alfred Camino, Ed Davis, and Mason Plumlee.
Yeah, and even that, the value of return on some of those is not entirely, sterling. C.J. McCollum's going to fetch you something. But Mason Plumlee, it's kind of probably situational, and it's likely the receiving team would be looking at him as a backup center again, if they were going to make themselves better. Otherwise, he's more valuable to Portland as a starter than he's going to be to most anybody else, simply because the Blazers don't have another one, right?
Yeah, I mean, and there's a little bit of added value in him for a little while longer because of his contract status, because he's still on a rookie deal. So that the little bit of that, if a team is trying to get under the cap for make a push for one season and then decide if he's, you know, worth spending that extra money on, there could be a little bit of value in him there. The same can be said with Aminu and Davis both being on value deals. I think the fact that Aminu played better, I think, than anybody anticipated this season on the offensive side of the court adds to his value. But you're right. You're not looking at you're not trading Aminu for Paul George. I mean, that's not happening. So it seems like all of these guys, you know, outside of McCollum, are going, if you're going to move any of them, are really lateral moves.
I like what you said there, though, because that nearly guarantees that the Blazers will trade Aminu for Paul George, and I'm all for that. So there we go. Let's get a little granular on this now. So, I mean, we talk about a bare cupboard. Exactly where and exactly how do you see the cupboard being bare, and where do you see it being full? What shelves are stocked, and what's looking threadbare?
Obviously, the front court's an issue. The Blazers have to decide what their situation is with Myers Leonard. Whether or not to sign him is a difficult one, and I don't think it totally hinges on the Blazers, and that bothers me to an extent. Because what I mean by that is that they have a number, and they had a number, you know, going into the season that Myers and his agent turned down. It's been disputed what that number was, and I have a feeling that Neil Olshey in the front office are probably at that number or lower now, considering the season-ending shoulder surgery and his performance to a level that didn't meet the hype that came out of the Memphis series. Myers is saying all the right things about wanting to stay in Portland, and good for him. But beyond that, you know, you've got Ed Davis on a deal. Mason's still on his rookie deal. Kamen, I mean, more than likely, he's either going to take that 15th man role again, or he's going to move to either the woods or the end of the coaching bench. So that one's kind of strange. I have a feeling that the number for Myers is somewhere between 8 and 11 million. But it only takes one team to really throw that off. Some team out there with some cap space and short on big men can really screw with that, and that can really, really hinder the Blazers' plans. You take a look at Alan Crabb. I was talking with Oliver Maroney on Twitter, and you know, he has heard from other people out in the NBA world that Crabb's numbers can get up to 14 to 15 million. And as ludicrous as that may sound, let me just throw this out there: Danny Green's at 10 million. Amon Shumpert's at $9 million. Corey Brewer's at almost $8.5 million. That's under the old cap. If you go with the cap rise and you raise it up incrementally, percentage-wise, a 23-year-old knockdown shooter from literally anywhere on the floor, and a guy who was one of the top transition points guys for the Blazers, and probably one of their better perimeter defenders, all of a sudden you start looking at that and you realize he's only 23? 14 or 15 million, when you scale it, doesn't sound terrible, but that's 14 or 15 million. That's a big chunk of the supposed cap space that the Blazers have. So you take a look at either him or Myers, you're tying up more than max money between just those two guys. So that cupboard starts to look really bare if you're planning on re-signing both those guys. You've got no draft pick this year, thanks to making the playoffs, and I know that sounds kind of crazy.
Well, I always maintain, I'm going to interrupt you there, Dan. It's not thanks to making the playoffs. It's thanks to making that Aflalo trade last year. The playoffs and the draft pick are not mutually exclusive. Most teams in the NBA get to do both, but the Blazers don't. Not because they made the—I mean, this is how it's colored. This is how it's hyped. Oh, they made the playoffs, and that's way better. Well, it may be way better, but that's neither here nor there. They should have had both, but instead they had a couple months of Aaron Aflalo and then a disintegrating team, which was a blunder. There is no way around that. So, sorry, that's why they don't have a draft pick. Anyway, please do continue.
No, I mean, you're right. That's my own bias coming through in that I was fully embraced the tank fest. I am an admitted tanker. I don't care what anybody says. I still think it was the right way to go. And that's another guy we haven't really talked about, speaking of tanking, is Noah Vonleh.
Oh, wow. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah. 60 plus games, all of a sudden the realization sets in that, you know what, we're going to make the playoffs. We might as well push for the highest seed we can get. All of a sudden, Noah Vonleh is nowhere to be found. Yeah. That, I mean, you can talk about development all you want. If you're talking development, you develop him for 82 games. That goes without saying. Vonleh's a guy that has potential. He's still incredibly raw. I'll just leave it at that. I have high hopes for him, and I hope he turns into these flashes of brilliance into consistent play. I mean, you see a move from him that footwork-wise that looks like a guy that's been in the league for 12 years. I mean, that clearly the talent is there. Getting it to come out on a consistent basis, I mean, you could say that about a lot of guys in the league. But that's not somebody I look at and I see GMs around the league salivating at.
No, he hasn't produced. And that's an issue. I mean, so look, every player you've mentioned has pros and cons, which obviously all players do, but I mean, they're amplified because these players are so young. Some of them you may not be able to keep anyway, but even if you do keep them, my issue with the cupboard may not be necessarily that it's bare, but that you've got two of everything. I mean, you've got two jars of peanut butter in Aminu and Harkless that are not identical, but you got Creamy and Crunchy of basically the same type of player, right? You got Ed Davis and Mason Plumlee, who again are different, but it's like a couple of cans of pineapple there. They're just chunked or whole. But, you know, they're both inside players. They're both rebounders.
I can't wait until next season when one of those guys on the team and we're chanting chunked pineapple from the stands.
Exactly. Well, and then, you know, even Crabbe and Henderson a little bit, they're vastly different offensive players, but they're both shooting guards. They're both going to score inside the arc. I mean, Crabbe can also shoot from outside if you set him up. But, you know, basically they're going to be scoring oriented shooting guards who are about the same height. I mean, so you've got a lot of duplication. It's like they're redundant so that there's fail safes at what they have. But what they don't have, there's a lot of that cupboard there. I mean, so
overlapping of deficiency.
Yeah, well, and the other thing is, you mentioned Myers Leonard, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's the one guy who doesn't fit. He's the one guy who's unique.
Yeah.
And yet he's the one guy that you may end up losing. You know, I mean, it's like, because, you know, I think somebody out there could offer an obnoxious contract to him too.
Yeah, and that's the one. I think that's why I said that I don't think it's the Blazers who are going to be the ones that really have the say on him. There's going to be a team out there that ends up costing or forcing their hand on him. And if you put my feet to the fire, Myers is the guy you keep because the potential's still there. Yeah. Crabbe is a guy who, he's not a dime a dozen, and I don't want it to come off that way. Crabbe has shown tremendous growth. He's a legitimate knockdown shooter. He was one of the best mid-range shooters in the league this year. Like you said, if you set him up, he can knock down threes. He can get out in the open court and finish in transition. He's a solid perimeter defender. But I think if you look around the market, every year there's a crop of those guys. The one thing that he has going for him is that he is quite young. So the fact that he's 23, that's pretty unique. You usually see these guys as journeyman NBA players that kind of develop their career as they go along, and then they're 27, 28 years old, and they last 3 or 4 years that position. You get a couple of the younger guys that sprout up a little bit earlier, a Wes Matthews, a Jay Crowder, something along those lines. But for every one of those guys, there's a Danny Green or, you know, a player like that who's kind of bounced around and learned his craft along the way. Meanwhile, 7-footers that shoot 40% from three don't exactly grow on trees. So I still hold out hope for Myers. I think he's got potential still. That's the thing, as I keep going back to, is that's the one that you have to try to keep. And I know that there's plenty of fans out there that are tired of him or want him to be this or want him to be that. If you just utilize him alone as a second unit big who stretches the floor and knocks down threes, that alone has value.
Yeah, I mean, Crab of the two is the one I think is farther along right now, and the one who you'd trust more, I think, to play in the playoffs, obviously, and in the offense in general. But he may be the one you let go simply because Leonard is the unicorn, as you say. But it's interesting now that you bring this up. I hadn't thought of it this way before, but when we describe it this way, it becomes apparent that the Blazers are not in the driver's seat again. And this was the big issue last year, and in some ways in years past, is that, but especially in 2015, every decision that was made was at the mercy of someone else. Mm-hmm. They did not control their own destiny. And once again, it's becoming apparent how little they can make choices. They can slap somebody's hand away, keep them from taking Myers Leonard or Alan Crabb or both, but then they're not going to have money to sign more free agents. They're going to come back with basically the same team, which is not a desirable outcome.
Well, here's the crazy thing. Yeah? They, even with the cap space they have, they can't even sign the same team.
Well, yeah, they have to let Henderson go.
let that sink in for a second. Yeah. There's all this talk about Horford or Howard or Whiteside. If they bring back this exact same roster, they can't.
No, well, yeah, they can't bring
back this roster. That's crazy to me. Right. You're talking about improving this team, and all we've been led to believe that all this. Now you've seen where I'm starting to scratch my head. Like, why? What's going on here? We don't have the cap space to bring back this team, but you're talking about adding to this team.
Well, I mean, this has been the story for 5 years now. Is basically, this is going to be the summer when we do something. This is going to be summer when we move the needle. And the needle ain't moved yet, except for last year backwards. But here's the thing, though. You still can get those free agents. You're just going to have to let some of these guys go, which is part of the bear-covered question. Do you sweep out? Would you be willing to sweep out an entire roster versus entire roster of potential free agents in order to get your Whiteside or Horford? I mean, for me, that's an unqualified yes. But how about you?
Yeah, I do it with some reservation, just because I don't think Horford, in the matter of Horford versus Whiteside, I'm team Horford. I think that he fits in better. There's a lot of questions about Horford's health, and particularly how he played in the playoffs versus how Whiteside looked in the playoffs, which at times was absolutely spectacular. So I could be convinced of Whiteside, but I'm really not sold on either one of them. Personally, the more I look at this, the more I'm sitting here saying, hold off for another year. And I know it sounds awful and crazy to say that, to push it off again. But this is the summer we were told that we were going to have all this space and all this flexibility and all this great stuff and fluffy unicorn rainbows awesomeness, and it's not going to be there.
Yeah, but you're not going to have it next summer either, especially if you resign these restricted free agents. And that cap space not going to be there, and then CJ McCollum's going to be the guy in question.
And here's, this is where I go with, is that you don't sign those guys. you load up, you go the way of the Sixers, and you do the regression, but you do the planned regression. You don't go the way of the Suns and load up on it and plan on this mediocre to semi-good team making. You can't plan on everyone growing. If your plan is based on best possible situation, you're planning incorrectly. That's an issue. You can't do that, because if you're planning on Maurice Harkless turning into a legitimate top tier wing and Al Farouq Aminu turning into a 42% 3-point shooter and CJ and Dame suddenly become perimeter lockdown defenders, that's not going to work. You can't do that. My idea. And because the free agents this year are Kevin Durant and everyone else, there's definitely value in guys like Horford and Whiteside. That I'm not just forsaking them, but the year after 2017, the list of free agents is a mile long, because that's the year that every player has been planning for the past 3 years when they found out the cap was going up. They have all maximized or plan to maximize their earning potential in that season. So you hold off on your cap space like crazy. And the way you really make this splash is you go the way of the Sixers for 1 year and you go the way of the Celtics the next year. By that, I mean you trade CJ McCollum before his rookie deal comes up. And as I'm sure people are sitting here shaking their heads, screaming, yelling, I am firmly of the mind that those two cannot work together because the defense behind them has been so bad, and getting the defense behind them is nearly impossible to do consistently.
Yeah, you know, I can tell you, Dan, that they will. This will never. I understand what you're outlining, but they will never be able to sell that. And I'll tell you who. Not only would they never be able to sell that to the fans, I guarantee you, if Neil Olshey brought that to Paul Allen, Paul Allen would probably Kevin Pritchard him on the spot.
Yeah.
Even though he is Neil Olshey. I mean, you know, Olshey can sell things better than anybody else in the universe. But that, I don't see any way to disguise it. Even though I get it, that makes sense. But then that would mean retroactively, we'd have to look back at the last few years and say, this is what it was all leading to. Yeah. And that will never, that would not even cross their minds to try to package that. So let me ask you this question. If we get to the end of the summer and the pitch is, well, we kept this team together. We didn't get any big name free agents. We kept them together because we feel that these young players will grow together. We had a great start last year, and we think if we just stay the course, this is going to turn into a Spurs-like dynasty. Even if they don't mention the Spurs, you know, that's the implication, young team built around stars, et cetera. Do you buy that at all? Do you buy that that was the plan, and do you buy that that will work?
I wanted to stop you like three words into that because I was shaking my head vehemently. Just no. I want no part of that. Before anybody calls me, you know, nasty names and such as far as the whole trade CJ thing and this hat can't work together. It was only 1 year, blah, 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 blah. I like CJ. I think he's a fantastic player. I like Damian Lillard. I think he is also a fantastic player. They just do too much of the same together. And if you look around the league, what's funny is people point to the Golden State series as the example for how it can work. I don't know how that series was an example of how it could work, because I just watched two guards go for 70 points a game against them over and over and over again. So I just...
It didn't matter which two guards.
No, that's what I mean. It didn't matter. They can't be side by side with each other. That's not a thing. And as much as the argument is made is how much this team resembles a young Warriors team, I think they need to make a Warriors-esque move. And that Monte Ellis deal, you know, remember there was a ton of people that wanted to trade Steph and keep Monta. That was a real thing in Oakland a couple of years ago. I think that's the same kind of deal Portland needs to make. And this is where I go with as far as free agency is concerned next year, is if you trade CJ for either a big or a legitimate three, a legitimate scoring top flight three, or a young top flight three that can be a two-way player, then you target the big in 2017, or you get the big this year and you target the wing in 2017. That, to me, seems to be the best possible course of action. As you said, will that fly with the front office, or will that fly with Paul Allen? I don't know. I tell you one thing, being able to draft a big this year would have been a nice thing to be able to do.
Yeah, or a wing, or something. Someone cheap. So look, an article came out this week. I think we cited it. I forget off the top of my head who did it, but I believe Bobby Marks was the source, that said part of the Blazers' strategy would be making or hoping their restricted free agents waited to sign a contract so that they could pursue unrestricted free agents before the contract offers for the restricted free agents counted against their caps. In other words, how that works is Myers Leonard, for instance, is coming off of a relatively small contract. That contract will not count a lot against the salary cap, but as soon as he signs an offer sheet with another team who's offering him $15 million, that $15 million counts against Portland's salary cap until they either accept the offer or refuse it. So they're saying there's some timing wiggle room in there before those offer sheets are signed, where the Blazers could make some cap space work for them and then re-sign their own restricted free agents, which technically is true. But my argument is, if you have to depend on that happening in order to make your plan work, your plan needs some work.
Yeah, what we're talking about here, for anybody who's not clear, is this, the cap space holds that players have coming off their contracts, and it's all based on their previous scale salary. So with a guy like Myers Leonard, who was on his rookie deal, I believe his cap holds somewhere between $7 and $8 million, whereas opposed to if he gets offered that $15 million, that's doubled. It's kind of ironic that they're basing their plan off of this when they signed.
If they are, this is a third party speculating,
yes,
right?
Yeah, you're correct. Sure. If they are basing their plan off this, and they signed Lillard a year early, it kind of makes you another one of those head scratchers. Like, well, that's a bigger cap hold than it would have been, like, by what, $15 million?
Yeah, it's a bigger cap. Yeah.
So that's an even bigger space that you would have had, but now you want to nickel and dime the guys who are going to be out there trying to get their max earning potential, and you're going to tell them no? That's part of your big plan? Like,
yeah. Or not no permanently, but ask them to wait. And I tell you, even if one of the players or one or more of the players would agree to this, which they shouldn't, I mean, this is why agents exist.
Yeah.
You know, agents exist precisely to stop you when you want to do something like this to help your team. Not because you don't want to help the team, but because, A, these guys are, you know, 23 years old, like you said. Their career could end with an injury tomorrow. They need to get their money, okay? Number two, do you think Neil Olshey is not going to trade you if he thinks it's going to help his team?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Where was that loyalty end?
Yeah. It's one way.
This isn't Dirk Nowitzki or Tim Duncan, who a guy who's been with his team for 17, 18, 19 years, who is waiting for everybody else to do their deals and then readjusting their salary because they're not getting traded and the team is waiting on them.
And they've made $100 million or $150 already.
Exactly. So this is not that case. These are guys that are... This may be their one and only chance at a lucrative deal. We may look back in 3 or 4 years and go, how the heck did that guy get that contract? Or the complete opposite. Wow, this guy's really underpaid for what he's at. But we don't know that at this point. So this could be their only time to get a big money deal. So
yeah. They don't wait. Would
I'm
you
not
wait?
No, not in a million years. I'm not comfortable with that at all. I mean, the whole take one for the team. Sure, if I'm a 15-year vet and I'm David West and I'm going to San Antonio, sure. But if I'm a 23, 24, 25-year-old, not a chance. No way. You're one ruptured Achilles away from not getting the money unless Mark Cuban really loves you.
Or even if the even if he's going to sign it, though. I mean, the argument will be, well, he get that from the Blazers. He just has to wait a couple weeks. I'm telling you, the first time someone puts $15 million in front of Alan Crabb, he needs to sign that deal that day.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just look, they're independent contractors. And the players, I believe, ethically owe everything they can give to the franchise while they are contractually bound to that franchise. No doubt about that. But as soon as that contract gives them an option, I think they're also ethically bound to do what's best for them, given that option, and to take full advantage of it, because the franchise is going to take full advantage of them. So, yeah, it's like if on July 4 or whenever the moratorium ends this year, if Minnesota puts $15 million in front of Alan Crabb needs to sign it, and the Blazers are up the creek. And if they needed that money, they should have planned better to take advantage of it. And so, yeah, it's not on Crabb. It's not on Leonard. They need to go get their money. Mo Harkless, too. I mean, we'll get to this in a second. I want to ask you, though, before we talk about individual players to close the show, on a scale of 1 to 10, how easy do you think it would be, theoretically, in a vacuum, if no other teams, if the Blazers could cherry-pick some free agents that they wanted or have a chance of drawing them, how easy do you think it would be to improve this roster? On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being super easy, 1 being impossible, this roster's not going anywhere as is.
3 to 4. And I really don't think this is an easy task. There's no draft pick to bring in young, cheap talent, which this year and next are going to be cheaper than at any time in recent modern NBA history. A rookie deal is going to be a drop in the pond compared to what guys are getting. If you get a guy like Ben Simmons or Ingram or Labissiere or Poeltl or any of these guys, Buddy Hield, those rookie deals are worth their weight in gold. And that's why I think Portland has to find a way to get into this draft, and they have to nail that pick. And as much as I'm beating up Olshay for what he's done in the leading up to this, you know, where he has been successful is in the draft. He's been his draft record is fantastic. So if he's going to make a splash, he's got to get into this draft. And then all the reports seem to be coming out saying that he's going to get into that draft. So,
well, we should talk about that for a second there, because that's I don't see that happening in a significant way. Significant meaning mid first round, you know, or God forbid higher, because for the exact reason you mentioned, I mean, the you can't buy a first round pick for cash anymore unless it's a totally low one that teams trying to get out of salary obligation. But that doesn't exist now because the cap's going up, and I'm not sure there's anyone within $1 or $2 million of being able to sign the big name free agent that they want that needs to dump that pick in order to save it at this point.
I'm sure Brooklyn's in there somewhere. They always are.
Well, maybe it depends on who they're going for. But you know you're not going to be able to buy a first round pick outright. Do you trade for a first round
pick?
And
here's where I've been looking at deals for the past 5 years in the draft that have involved top flight draft picks and players, quote unquote, in their prime. The deal that struck me as, wow, that could be a real thing, was the Philadelphia New Orleans deal and how fitting it was for this team. That deal was the Jrue Holiday for Nerlens Noel and a first-round pick. Mm-hmm. If the Blazers choose to go the route of trading CJ and you get two young assets, i.e. a draft pick and a big, that could be huge.
Could be. I don't think it'll happen.
I don't either. You're talking about the silver bullet right there.
Yeah, your draft picks are too valuable, like you just said, and I don't think the Blazers are ready to trade McCollum for anything short of an absolute home run. No. But the thing is that the quote that I heard from Olshay, and I hope I'm not misquoting him here, was that Paul Allen is our owner, so we always have potential to get in the draft, basically, right?
They're buying a second round pick.
Which, that's what that means, yes. And, you know, Alan Crabb's a second round pick, yeah. I mean,
yeah.
So that it could work. But again, you're talking about an incremental young change to the roster, not a home run. So I'm higher than your three or four. I would say that, give me the right two players and I can make not only this season's performance legit, but maybe exceed it, all other things being equal, even if other teams aren't injured.
What are those two players?
Well, for me, I think the Horford-Sanders combo that we talked about very early on before anyone else was, that would be my golden goose right there. Not because I'm in love entirely with either player, but because I think that's the best combination of value, skill set, and experience that the Blazers could put in a front court, and then all of a sudden you don't worry so much about Lillard and McCollum's shortcomings on defense. I think I'd also want a scorer at small forward to come off the bench, but I think I can get that or create one.
Yeah, so, the market always seems to allow for a few of those every year. And like I said, with every couple or every year a couple of them pop up, so I don't think those ones are tough to find. I'm convinced at this point that CJ's going to have to be the one to go, because you can't, as much as people may debate who's better, who's got more potential, there's no way they can trade Lillard.
Right.
It just can't happen. So, and when you look at the number of players that are under contract on this current team, I think it's eight, it's eight mm-hmm. or eight or nine. I have to double check it. You have to fill out a roster with six, seven more people. And you've got roughly $30 million to do that?
Yeah.
How do you do that if you're going to spend $22.5 million on Hassan Whiteside?
Well, at that point, I don't care. At that point, I think the Blazers just need to go for their asset. But so anyway, I'm at about 7.5 as far as potential to improve. You're at about a 3.5. Where's your confidence on a scale of 1 to 10 that the team can actually improve, given the front office, given the cap situation, given the market and all that stuff? Where are you lower than your three or four in terms of them actually being able to pull it off?
If they had a draft pick, I'd say no. I'd say it would probably be higher. The lack of a draft pick really, really hurts what I think they can do. Because so far, Olshay's ability to sign free agents has been based on value free agents. This team doesn't need value free agents. This team needs legitimate top flight talent. So until that happens, I'm not sitting on the fence. I'm firmly on this side of the fence and saying no, that it can't happen. I can be, my mind can be changed. You know, if they land it, they land that big fish, I'll be there clapping, yelling, screaming with everybody else. But until that happens, I don't see it. Like I said, when we started this off, I think the cupboard's pretty darn bare, and I know it's a pessimistic outlook on it. I just don't see it.
Yeah, I'm about a 4.52 probably. Well, let's close up with the particular free agents. We can talk more about this as the summer goes, but I think can we both agree that Chris Kaman and Brian Roberts are expendable? Who cares one way or the other? It's not going to make a major wave. That you do whatever you need to do with them.
Yeah, yeah. No, okay. I think Kaman will end up being a coach anyway. So
yeah, excellent. Okay, so let's start with the restricted free agents then. Alan Crabb, keep or let go?
Depends on the price. He's number two on my board as far as the keepers go. If you get him for $10 million or less, you have to look at it, because that's a value play at that point in time. Once he starts creeping into $11 or $12 million, then you're competing at the same level as everyone else. So if you get a hometown discount, great. If not, let him go.
Mo Harkless?
As much as people love him and the potential that's there, I'm team no on team Mo. I think there's too many guys out there that are like him. If he had some semblance of a reliable jumper, I'd be more akin to say yes, and people can say he improved this, that, or the other. I'm not sold that he's a guy that you have to have.
Myers Leonard, he's your guy,
he's,
right?
He's the guy. I've been with him, since day one of this season. Go back to pretty much anything I've said about him and been along for the ride. People can say what they want. I still think he's the one that has the potential. He's the one that showed the most capacity for growth. So Whether or not it's actualized is a totally different story. But again, we're talking about a 7-footer that shoots 40% from three, has the ability to play post defense and be a rim protector. We've seen it, flashes of it. But he does have one bankable skill in the fact that he can stretch the floor from the five position. So I'll take the bankable skill over and potential over just potential.
So has the Gerald Henderson train already left the station? Then I don't think Gerald Henderson would actually probably come back. I mean, I think he can probably get other opportunities elsewhere that are going to be bigger than he has in Portland, especially if they keep Crabb. But what do you think?
I like Henderson. I think he's a fantastic player. If Gerald was like Chris Kamen and said, you know what, I really like it here. I'd like to stay here. I don't even take less money to stay here. I would be thrilled. But Henderson is at peak earning potential right now for his age. I would not expect to see him back next season. I wish him the best of luck. Now I sit here and go, hey, how about that Nick Batum trade? Oh, jeez.
Yeah, I mean, that's like, and I will say, though, with some of these deals, you've got to wait them out. And I do that because there seems to be a point during the following year where every trade looks great and every trade looks awful. And you got to give them 2 or 3 years. But yeah, I mean, the Nick Batum trade looked pretty good mid-season.
Yeah,
and then looks not real good right now, but we'll see. I mean, we may do a recap on some of these things. There are articles coming out on trade and free agency all this week. We may recap them next week. But our time has flown from us. I mean, huge subjects. We'll spend the summer discussing them, I think. But hopefully, I mean, we'll see. See if the Blazers can pull the rabbit out of the hat. Again, we're waiting for Olshay to do his trick, his real trick, and let's see if he can pull it off.
Yeah, at this point, I'm hoping for miracles. This is the season. This is the off season that was kind of promised as, hey, this is when we're gonna make some moves. So as pessimistic as I've been and I continue to be, then that probably won't change. I'm hopeful. I truly am hopeful. My outlook is that it won't happen. It probably won't happen, but I would love to be proved wrong. I would love to head into next season with a fully stocked cupboard and a roster that looks ready to compete for 50 wins and a legitimate top four seed. Do I think that's going to happen? No, but it'd be awesome.
And that's how we'll close it, with Dan Morang going Principal Skinner on Neil Olshay. Prove me wrong, kids. Prove me wrong. And until next week, this has been the Blazers Edge podcast. Thank you for joining us.